Right, yeah, good afternoon. I will put these files in a regular pattern on the web pages. I got a question about problem 27 on the homework for Friday, and that got me to the realization that I had actually skipped something which is, the problem was copied from the last time I taught the class, and there I did a theorem which I didn't do. So there are basically two options. Either I can give you the missing theorem or we can skip the problem.
Is that the Euler phi function?
No, not the Euler phi function. It's the one for the Bernoulli numbers formula involving the Stirling numbers.
Okay.
Oh. Well, that one's fine.
Well,
it's the other one with the exponential generating function that's causing me
a lot of
trouble.
Okay, for the one with the exponential generating function, use the product property. Introduce a fake factor 1. And then that for that summation, add the next Bernoulli number. So you have the next Bernoulli number gives you some product formula. And then you interpret this as a product of generating functions. And one of them is as we did when we looked at labeled objects splitting things up with exponential generating functions. And one of them is the exponential generating function then for this factor 1, which is the ordinary exponential function. So that gives you that equation. Try it out.
So do you want to just give us the theorem?
I can give you the theorem, yeah.
And the proof of the theorem?
Yes.
Maybe the solution to the problem?
No. I mean, you could choose. We can either skip the problem or I do the theorem. No, that wasn't very clever to not go to the right page. Do that. I want to go somewhere. Yes. I downloaded the book, but I did not go to the right page, so that's where I'm currently just trying to find the place.
The class notes, that book?
No. This is it's not in the class notes. That's why. Okay, now I need to go. Let me go back to the index and see where I want to go. Where do I have this generating function? Which chapter was this?
I think the litmus test is, did you get the joke from Zach? Whether it's too inappropriate for class or not, did you get the joke from Zach?
Was it in the Splinter email?
Or
no. Oh, okay. But I missed it.
No, just Zach in general.
Way to check if your joke is bad is to ask whether or not you got a joke from Zach. I think one time or another. Not as specific.
Paper 85. Okay. So.
Zach
famed the world round
for jokes.
Sorry, that
was a
good
joke. So, where are you?
Thank you. Number 27. We're missing a theorem.
Why would you
say? Okay. So. Okay, so the theorem which we are missing is the following. Let's suppose we have let Fn and Gn be sequences of numbers and associated exponential generating functions big F of t and big G of t. Okay, then the theorem says the following two assertions are equivalent. Okay, the first one is G0 is equal to F0 and Gn is the sum over K goes from 1 to N over Sn K Fk. And that's the bit which you want to have for the problem. So your Fk will be basically the rest of the statement apart from the SnK, and the Gn will be the Bernoulli numbers. Part B is a statement for the generating functions. G of t is equal to F of x of t minus 1. Okay. And the proof is basically if that holds from B to A, essentially what is just a tedious calculation on the coefficients. So I will just give you a proof from A to B. What is G of t? G of t is equal to G0, which is equal to F0, plus the sum n is greater or equal than 1. And now I use this formula for Gn. Sum k goes from 1 to n. SnK Fk t to the n divided by n factorial. Now I'm playing the usual trick. I observe that I can include. So what I want to do is I want to move this sum out, and I want to have the sum go from k equals to 0, and basically with the F0 I can why can I have this? Oh, because the S gets 0 for k equals 0. Yeah, because I can't split into 0 parts. That's why I can have this. So I claim by switching the sums, this is equal to the sum over k greater or equal than 0 fk times x of t minus 1 to the k divided by k factorial. So what am I, why does this hold? Basically, I take this sum over n, I write that sum inner, take the sum over the snk, and I'm using the formula for the exponential generating function of snk, which is xt minus 1 to the k divided by k factorial. And that's also taken care of, this t to the n and the n factorial. Okay, and that is by definition f of x of t minus 1, because f, big F, was the exponential generating function for the little f's. Okay, and if you have that identity, I think now you take the exponential generating function for s, you take the exponential generating function. You don't need it. You take the exponential generating function for the Bernoulli numbers, which you have from problem 26. You take the exponential generating function for the rest here, which is just some harmless exponential function. And you show that this identity holds between these. And then that follows as a consequence. Okay, so that's problem about problem 27. Right. Next thing, as I mentioned, I will be away in early November, and I thought that it probably would make most sense for one of these days, that's November 11. This is the day after a calculus exam. I think it's actually even calculus and differential equations on the day before. That for that particular day, we cancel the lecture.
November 11.
So that there is accounting for the right number of classes. You're all welcome to come this Friday to the combinatorics seminar. The first hour I talk about something with permutation groups that should be accessible to anyone who is a graduate student. It's intended to be easy and just looks at some what I think nice combinatorial property. In general, since many of you are teaching, let me just mention aside, you should not cancel class. The university, for the undergraduate classes, the university is very picky in that if a class doesn't run, that there is an alternate class and that the number of hours goes through. Okay, anyhow, that's... And then there will be four other classes left, and there I will get substitutes. Right. So what do I want now? I want to go. Why doesn't this? I want to go to the notes. So. That gets me to the next homework. This has to do with lattices and posets. Pass these around. So what we did last time is we looked at the fundamental theorem for finite distributive lattices, which told us that if we have a distributive lattice, it can be obtained uniquely as the lattice of order ideals of a poset, and the poset actually would be simply the poset of the join irreducible ones. And I thought I'd briefly just look at examples for this. And I will say something about the homework in a little while. About examples. So, distributive lattices. What examples of distributive lattices do we know?
Subset lattices?
Subsets. Subsets with inclusion. Yeah. So, if we look at a lattice of subsets of the set 1 up to n, if we wanted to write it as a lattice of join irreducibles of a poset, what poset do we need to take? Well, the theorem told, or the stuff we did before the theorem told us, we need to take the poset of join irreducibles. What are the join irreducibles in this lattice? So these are subsets which cannot be written as union of subsets. And the empty set is the union over the empty set. So the empty set is a union in that context. What does it mean that I cannot write a subset as a proper union?
Single
element. Yes. So the join irreducibles are the one element sets. How are they in relation? Well, then no relation whatsoever. So the pose set is simply the pose set of endpoints and if I look at the order ideals of that pose set, it's simply the subsets of the points. Because there is no property order. Any subset automatically is an order ideal because there is no inclusion. So that's the theorem in the case of the lattice of all subsets. There is another nice distributive lattice, and that's the lattice of divisors. Of divisors of a number n, what does it mean to be join irreducible with a lattice of divisors? I mean, with numbers and divisibility, prime is always a good word. Yeah. So, what do we want with prime? Yes, if a number is prime, clearly it cannot be written as a product, so that is join irreducible. Is that all? So if you look at the divisors of 12, how would you write 4 as a join?
If it's power of primes.
Powers of primes. Yeah. So join irreducibles are the powers of primes. So what pose set do I get? Well, I get all the powers of primes, so I get the prime, I get the prime square, right? And they are still included in each other, and so forth up to p to the k, and that's the first prime, and then I get the second prime, up to some power k2, and so forth. So in that case, the pose set I get is simply a disjoint union of several lines, where the lines are just given by the exponents of the primes. And again, order ideal here means simply if I have something in this hierarchy, I need to have the lower powers and I can just combine them for the different primes as I desire. Yeah, so that's just as an illustration what this theorem does in the cases of these two distributive lattices. Okay. There is a some homework of the homework problems have to do with distributive lattices. Problem 30 is a characterization of distributive lattices. So a lattice is distributive if and only if you cannot have a sublattice or an interval in there which has one of these two structures. And, I mean, if you have these structures in there, it's very easy to see that the lattice cannot be distributive. So sublattice, what I would allow is to remove or take several vertices and join them into one, just consider them as one vertex, or cut something off and on a top or bottom. Yeah, that it cannot be distributive is very easy because you just look at these two lattices and you observe that they are not distributive. It's a bit more interesting to do it the other way around. And if you want hints about this, this is really a standard. If you Google distributive lattice characterization or so, you probably will find tons of web pages which describe this. Problem 31 is just about getting the... what do I want? Construct the... What am I writing here? Let's construct the... That works. So the lattice is a post set. So if I take these lattices as post sets, I could build the order ideals, could look at the order ideals and their inclusion, and that will give me two lattices. This is just what we've done in some examples before. Problem 32 is in some way to give an example that this fundamental theorem about distributive lattices does not work in the case if lattices are not distributive. Give me an example of two lattices where then, because of the theorem, at least one of them cannot be distributive, which have the same post sets of joint irreducibles. Problem 33 is just, well, probably that should have been at the very start. That's to show that something is a lattice, namely, if you look at the post set of intervals, that's just the property of the lattice. Problem 34, chains, is something we will get to in a little while. And problem 29 is about post sets and one construction one can do on post sets, namely a direct product. So, let me, and that is something which I had skipped before, so let me give this definition. Definition, and this, the definition doesn't have a number. Let's suppose that we have X and Y are post sets, and I need orderings on there. I have an ordering for X, and I have an ordering for Y. Then I can take the Cartesian product, that's just a set of pairs. So, X cross Y, I want to define an ordering, so I have a pair X1, Y1, and I have a pair X2, Y2, and I want, this is the new ordering I define. How do I want to define it? Well, if and only if both the first and the second ordering are in relation, so x1 with respect to the x ordering is smaller or equal than x2, and y1 with respect to the y ordering is smaller or equal than y2. And that gives again a post set, and one can furthermore show if we have lattices and we do this construction, the result is again a lattice. Why is this construction of interest? Because it gives us a nice way to describe some prominent lattices, for example, these two. And let me just state that proposition. That's proposition 3.8. Let A be a set of cardinality N, the lattice of subsets. L is the power set of A, so the lattice of subsets. then, and this is part A of the theorem, L is isomorphic to the lattice given as a direct product, namely, I just take this lattice 0, 1, and I take the direct product of this. And so forth. And I take the direct product of this n types. On the level of the Hasse diagram, basically this means if you look at the Hasse diagram for the subsets of a set, this is the n-dimensional hypercube. This looks like a projection of an n-dimensional cube. Yeah, so one can get that lattice in this way, and part B for n greater than 1, let D of n be the lattice of divisors, divisors of n, then D of some composite number, the product pi to the ei, is simply the Cartesian product of the lattices for the prime powers, p1 to the e1, direct product up to D of pn to the en. So these par lattices for the prime powers are again these lattices here, these single lines. So in the case of divisors of n, it's not just that we get it back by taking the disjoint union and the order ideals, but we also would get it back by taking the direct product of these posets. And yeah, that proposition I also had plan to make a homework exercise. It isn't on this sheet. It might make it at some point later into the homework. Or to give the lazy version, I wasn't planning to prove it because it's not really hard, but it's a little bit messy to write down. I mean, what do you need to do? You need to show an isomorphism. So you basically need to say, if you have an element in your lattice, what tuple does it correspond to? And that is not hard to figure out. And then you need to show, well, that it's a bijection will come. Once you have this correspondence, the bijection will come essentially for free. And you need to show that preserves the inclusion. Right. And that is homework problem 29. And I think that's all about this new homework. Yeah. So far, any questions?
On number 30, is it when it says either of the following two as sublattices, is it talking about specifically those two or like generalizations of those patterns? Like, is it... So, first one that has five vertices.
I think the answer. I think what you mean is there. It's a general relation of these.
Okay.
So you can always, you could always take vertices out or coagulate vertices.
Right.
That does not really make that property suddenly hold or so, because if there are things if there are things left out, you still have remaining vertices, and if it is before different, it's different still after you take certain vertices out. So if you have, for example, if you have this diamond configuration, if you have this, and now you insert something here, that doesn't do that. That does not. That cannot make it distributive. If you, of course, insert further lines or so, then that stuff goes wrong.
And so the one that you just drew still has the preview down.
Yeah, that has, yeah, yeah, yes,
okay,
yeah.
That makes sense.
So that's why it is not distributive. And yeah, basically what you want to use is, if you want to look at why does distributivity fail? Here distributivity fails in some way because the join of these two is the same as the join of these two. And in the other one, it fails. There is another way how it can fail, and that is that if you first join either of these, or if you join this with this, you end up here, and if you meet, you end up down here. So if you look at how it, in some way, these are the two ways how distributivity can fail, and that leads to these two structures. Right. Any other questions? So what I now want to do is, we are still staying with posets, but I want to look at posets in a somewhat different way. Namely, it's going a bit more towards graph theory. I want to look at chains in posets, and that actually will get us to an area which is called extremal set theory. And I'll tell you later what that means. So this is chains and extremal set theory. So, what is a chain in a post set? A chain is simply a set of elements in the post set such that any two of them are comparable. So if I look at these and I look at the partial post set given by them, it's just a line. A chain in a post set is a subset Xi in some index set such that any pair Xi Xj is comparable. So, for example, if I take the integers, it is one chain. With the natural ordering, it is one chain. I'm not allowing the Hasse diagram ever to fork. Okay. Right, that's a chain. The other thing I want to use is the opposite, an anti-chain. An anti-chain is a subset that no two elements are comparable.
So for divisors and stuff, it would be distinct ones?
For what?
For divisors that we had earlier.
Yes. But what are you talking about, chain or anti-chain?
Anti-chain.
Anti-chain, yes.
Distinct.
If you have this lattice of divisors, if you take some elements even there which have no common divisor,
right. They
would be an anti-chain. Yes. And to be in it, and that's exactly the anti-chains. Yes. Is a subset that no two elements are comparable. Right. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at ways of taking a lattice and splitting it into chains or into anti-chains. So, for example, here I could split this lattice into two chains, right? One goes here and one goes there. This I could split into three chains, one goes here, one goes here, one goes here. It is possible in some lattices or post sets, if I split it into chains, that not all go the full way. It might be that at some point, if I added something here, basically then I could take that chain and I would take that chain. But so it is. So with that convention, clearly it is possible to split a lattice into chains. To split it into anti-chains, I just want to split into subsets. So for example, here an anti-chain would be this, this, and this, the different layers.
You should always be able to do that, just take your strata.
Yes, yeah.
But what are the top strata in there, for instance? Wouldn't that be less than equal to itself?
Any, yeah, so no two different elements. Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's. Any two different elements, I need to see.
I suppose that would be true for any anti-chain.
Yes.
That every element
yeah.
would be less than
yeah.
equal to
yeah.
itself.
Right, and in some way, as this picture already shows, partitioning into chains or partitioning into anti-chains is a dual process. One goes this way and one goes this way. It's not hard to see that if you have a chain and you have an anti-chain, they together can have only one element in common, right? Because if they had two elements in common being in the same anti-chain, they couldn't be comparable. Being in the same chain, they would have to be comparable, and that cannot happen. So a chain and an anti-chain can intersect only in one element. So from that trivial observation, we get a lemma. So let P be a post set. So if P has a chain of size R, then P cannot be partitioned. Into less than R anti-chains. Right? Because any two elements of that chain need to be in different anti-chains. And the same thing holds dually if it has an anti-chain. So that's the dual for anti-chains. If it has an anti-chain of cardinality R, then it cannot be partitioned into less than, is it less than or fewer than?
Fewer.
Yes, thank you. Into fewer than R chains. Well, if you go to infinities, that's all. Yeah, that's not where we want to go. Okay. So that holds, and holds for obvious reasons. It turns out, in some way, this is actually sharp. So what this is telling us is basically, if we look at the minimum number of chains in a partition of a post set, that number needs to be at least as large as the size of any anti-chain. So the minimum number of chains in a partition needs to be at least as large as the maximum size of an anti-chain. It turns out these two numbers are equal. And that is not obvious that they are. I mean, in this case, well, if you look at the examples, yes, we have three chains here, and the anti-chain would have... we have an anti-chain of size 3. Here we have an anti-chain of size 2, so we can partition into two chains. If I go to this, then I wouldn't draw this. So I would, the only way I would draw a line would be this, and here again I have an empty chain of size 3, and I can partition into 3 chains. That theorem in its own, I'm going to state it in a moment, might look a little bit, okay, yes, one can do it. Why bother with it? But it turns out this theorem actually has quite a few consequences. There are some which I'm going to do in this section, and this will have to do with extremal set theory. This will have to do with properties. Can you choose elements in a set or elements in a sequence with certain properties? The other thing which we will get as consequences is this is actually, you can look at this property more in a graph theoretic sense, where it tells us something about connections. That if we want to connect vertices in a graph via certain paths, well, the number of paths not just is minimum, different paths we need is minimum, somehow the number of elements which are separate in the way, but it actually is given exactly like this. And that has very much practical applications, and we'll actually have another chapter, either the next or the but next in the course, which will in some way look at a number of theorems from discrete optimization or so, which are these are theorems which are combinatorial in nature, which in some way all have exactly this flavor and indeed are equivalent to Dilbert's theorem, which is the theorem I'm going to look at next. So this might look initially as a somewhat futile exercise, but it turns out it's an abstract way of looking at something which also then has a lot of practical applications. So this is theorem 317, and this is named after a person, Dilworth's theorem. As any good theorem named after a person, that person wasn't the first one who proved it. It was proven before by Galay and Milgram, and they didn't publish their proof because they didn't realize that it is a special case of something far more general, and I think one of them actually wasn't written in English, and one of them wanted to translate it into English first before publishing it. Anyhow, and that it was published in 1950. So, what does this theorem say? The minimum number little m, this is copied from somewhere, so the naming is actually consistently and clever. The little m is the minimum, the big M will be the maximum. The minimum number little m of chains in a partition of a post set equals the maximum big M, well, the maximum size big M of an antichain. And we know already that little m, the previous lemma tells us that little m must be at least as large as big M by the previous lemma. So it's just the other inclusion which is the interesting one. Right. 4 minutes.
So, this is probably not worth to really start the proof now. What we're going to do is we are going to do induction on the number of elements in a poset. And that is something which already gets very much a graph theoretical flavor. That's a standard method in graph theory. Try to take one vertex out and then have a smaller graph. And then there is basically a clever way how we are going to take partial chains and we're going to put them together in the right way, and we're going to put them together essentially along an anti-chain of maximal size. So we will take the poset, we will take an anti-chain of maximal size, and then we will build chains from here to the different elements and chains down and combine them. And that will give us the chains into which we can partition the whole lattice. Right. Yeah, so that's roughly the plan for the proof, and after that we will have some theorems about partitioning sets into subs or having sets and subsets with some intersection properties that this is constrained in certain ways, and that's what goes under the name of extremal set theory. But probably not today, and since I ran over a few times, let me stop here. Thank you very much.